yourself, just about it.
Accommodate one of our board members who's got a family urgency need to leave here in a half an hour, and accommodate that. You want to wait on your comments till after staff or before staff?
Yeah, that's fine, after staff.
Let's have Rebecca begin then.
Okay, I'd be happy to.
And again, anybody who wants to speak today, appreciate, turn in to Jean, fill out a card, and call you off.
Where are those cards?
I think on the table at the bottom of the stairs.
All right, well, good afternoon, board members. I'm Rebecca Fitzgerald. I'm an environmental scientist with your staff. I'm here today to discuss the Regional Water Board staff work plan to control excess sediment in sediment-impaired watersheds, also known as the staff work plan. This is a workshop item today. It's informational in nature. The primary purpose of this work plan is to provide another opportunity for interested parties to hear about the staff work plan and to provide oral comments. Because of this, I will be repeating a lot of what you heard at our last board meeting in January in Santa Rosa. In addition, I will also be presenting a more detailed summary of the comments that we have received and some more information on the changes that we've been making to the work plan over the last few months in response to comments. I should also point out that the title of the work plan has changed. We've just changed it to reflect really clearly, hopefully, that this is a work plan of tasks for Regional Water Board staff to do. This is what I intend to cover in my presentation this afternoon. I want to go over our sediment control program in general a little bit before I move on into an overview of the work plan itself. Then I want to take some time to focus specifically on some of the tasks, kind of as examples of what's in the work plan. Then I'd like to discuss regional task prioritization, our watershed prioritization process, talk about funding, comments, changes we've made, and where we go from there. But first, I want to talk about the region's sediment control program. I want to try to explain the bigger picture of how we intend and hope to control excess sediment in the region, and then how the staff work plan fits into this. So imagine, if you will, that this circle is the universe of the North Coast Region's sediment control program. It consists of the work that staff are currently doing in the red. It consists of work that we haven't started yet, that we intend to do. And the crossed hatch wedges here are just our tasks that some of those in those categories we're already doing, some we haven't started yet. And I also want to take a minute to say that these wedges are not to scale. They don't reflect any real numbers. They don't reflect the number of staff that are working on any of these tasks or how much sediment might be saved from one of these programs. But as you can see by the wedges, our sediment control program is being implemented through a wide variety of programs, some of which include basin plan amendments, such as developing the measures to control excess sediment amendment, other basin plan amendments like the stream and wetland system protection policy. Those tasks are for staff to develop these amendments and bring them to the board for your consideration. Our sediment control program also includes implementing our municipal, industrial, and construction stormwater program, implementing our 401 certification program for dredge and fill activities, implementing TMDL action plans and waivers such as the Garcia and the Scott, the implementation of existing watershed-wide waste discharge requirements, or WDRs, such as for Elk River, Freshwater Creek watersheds, developing general WDRs and waivers for categories of land uses, such as for vineyards, dairies, and grazing, and bringing them to the board for your consideration. Again, this is in blue, things we haven't done yet. Developing ownership-wide WDRs and waivers, such as for individual timber companies, U.S. Forest Service, county roads. It includes watershed-specific tasks. It includes other tasks, kind of more general category, internal management, working with counties on grading ordinances, working on general county plan updates, storm response, aerial reconnaissance, and so on. So again, our sediment control program includes work that we're doing, work that we still need to do in order to control excess sediment. And this leads me back then to the staff work plan. The work plan discusses all of these tasks in detail, both what we're doing now and what we need to do over the next 10 years, with a focus on the sediment-impaired watersheds. Staff work plan also includes additional tasks that apply to most, if not all, of these wedges, and they kind of lay over top of all the wedges, things like outreach and education and public participation, bringing it to the board, our training. All of these things kind of apply to all of the tasks you see represented as wedges. That hopefully gives you a better idea of what our sediment control program is in the region. And obviously, the staff work plan is a key component of it. Specifically, the work plan describes the actions and tasks that Regional Water Board staff are currently taking and intend to take in the next 10 years, as resources allow, to reduce and control human-caused excess sediment in the region's 27 sediment-impaired watersheds. The staff work plan includes implementation actions designed to meet the sediment TMDLs where TMDLs have been established. The work plan really is our to-do list. It's how we intend to implement our existing regulations. We're working with stakeholders, landowners, other agencies, et cetera, on some of these tasks now and have yet to start others. I also want to stress that the work plan is a staff-level planning document. It should guide management here within the office in developing each unit's annual work plans. And usually, as you know, we do not bring our staff-level work plans to the board in this fashion and open up a formal public comment period as we have done. But this work plan is a unique case. Since staff were directed by the board in the sediment TMDL implementation policy in 2004, to develop the work plan so specifically, we wanted to bring it back before you and get the valuable feedback provided by opening it up for public comment. The staff work plan, as I showed in the earlier slides, is also a part of our sediment control program, which is a program that's going to be constantly evolving. It's a living effort. We expect that tasks are going to change. Priorities will be arranged over time as we get more information, as conditions change in a watershed, as we get different funding levels, as we complete tasks, and so on. So real quickly, where does the staff work plan apply? It applies to our 27 sediment-impaired water bodies per the 2006 303D list listed there. Real quick, what the map shows you here, kind of that's filled in with the light blue color, is the area of the region that drains to a sediment-impaired water body. It's about 61% of the area of the region. 10 out of our 14 hydrologic units include sediment-impaired water bodies. And this right here is the outline of the North Coast region. As I just mentioned, 10 out of 14 HUs, 61% of the region. We developed this staff work plan to plan out the work we think is needed to better prevent and control excess sediment, and to do so in a way that is more effective than separate basin plan amendments for each one of these watersheds, and also in a way that is compliant with the state's non-point source policy. The non-point source policy even states that regional boards are expected to develop their own priorities and schedules for addressing specific types of non-point source pollution that's present within the region. And the work plan certainly does this for sediment. The work plan recognizes the value, recognized the value of this approach when the sediment TMDL implementation policy was adopted in 2004, which directed staff to develop this work plan. And the work plan approach was reaffirmed again by this board in 2005 when the language was adopted into the basin plan for the sediment TMDL implementation policy that went through the same time as the Scott TMDL went through. I want to make sure we're all talking about the same version of the work plan here today. The one that's available to the public is the November 14th, 2007 public review draft. There are copies in CD form on the table as well as a display copy out there, and obviously it's on our webpage. In the process of making changes to this work plan, you will see some of these changes in the presentation today. The next version is due out April 1st. So this is a brief summary of what the work plan contains. It contains regional sediment control tasks that apply to the entire region. There are 33 of them in the public review draft. and contains watershed-specific tasks, again, for each one of our sediment-impaired watersheds, priority rankings for each regional task and for each watershed. It contains a schedule to work on all the tasks in the next 10 years, again, assuming we have funding, and it includes an estimate of the resources and funding we will need. Specifically, the work plan estimates the need for another 19 permanent technical staff to execute all of the tasks listed in the work plan in the 10-year time frame. Although it is unusual, staff will be asking the board to consider adopting a resolution related to this work plan that directs the executive officer to execute the tasks listed in the staff work plan as resources allow and in the order of priority with some flexibility added in. We are also asking it to direct the EO to seek the funding resources needed to do the work. Staff feel a resolution will help our sediment control program be transparent. This is because a resolution reflects the weight and importance of the work plan and its applicability to a large number of the region's programs, plus because of the assignment to develop the work plan came from a resolution, we feel another resolution is appropriate. And the resolution should be before you at the June meeting. That's the next time I have the opportunity to come before you. I will now want to look at just a few of the regional tasks in a little bit more detail to hopefully give everyone a better idea of what our thought process and plans are. I don't intend to go through the whole list of regional tasks, nor all of the tasks for one of the watersheds like I did in December. The first task I will focus on is the task to develop the basin plan amendment for the measures to control excess sediment, and the task, which also includes as part of that task, to bring it to the board for your consideration. Staff are currently working on this project. I also want to say that this task is tied into the triennial review process that we went through last year, where it is ranked as priority 2 on our priority list. This language you see here is a change from the November 14th public review draft. This new text, which describes the task, I think does a better job. The old version just said adopt this amendment, and here this kind of reflects our intent for this task of staff to develop it and then bring it to you for your consideration. So how does this amendment really fit into our sediment control program? I want to spend a little time on this because there's confusion between what the work plan is and what the excess sediment amendment is. So I want to talk about their relationship a little bit. And to do that, I want to go back to the regional sediment control program universe that I started out with. But I wanted to look at it a little bit more in regards to regulatory mechanisms. Again, here the wedges don't reflect any real numbers. They don't reflect any scale. Just there to show some different categories. So as you know, in order to comply with the state's non-point source policy, all non-point source discharges, which includes sediment, must be regulated by a permit, a waste discharge requirement, a waiver of a WDR, or a basin plan prohibition. Regulation is currently in place to control excess sediment in the form of stormwater permits, 401 certifications for dredge and fill activities, timber harvest activities under our general WDRs and conditional waivers. We have a TMDL conditional waiver established for the Scott River, and we have watershed-wide WDRs already established for Elk and Freshwater Creek. And then we have a basin plan prohibition currently existing for logging, construction, and associated activities. So the rest of the excess sediment discharges from land use activities that are not covered by one of these options are currently unregulated. And this, hopefully, is where the measures to control excess sediment amendment will come in. If the excess sediment amendment is adopted by the board, then this scenario and the next I will show you will apply, as the excess sediment prohibition will fill the gap and ensure compliance for all those other land uses with the non-point source policy. The proposed excess sediment prohibition will then apply to all activities that have the potential to discharge excess sediment in amounts deleterious that are not already covered by a WDR or waiver. So this, then, is what we hope our short-term future will look like. And this is what we would then hope more of our long-term future would look like, as staff intend to shrink the number of land use activities that fall under the excess sediment prohibition. With general WDRs and general conditional waivers, as they are developed for specific activities, such as for dairies, vineyards, grazing, and restoration projects. And also as we develop individual permits, or WDRs or waivers, for the U.S. Forest Service, for county roads, for individual timber companies, which would leave a much smaller chunk that would then fall underneath the excess sediment amendment. Things like private roads and land uses that are not otherwise covered there. And now to go back to the relationship between the staff work plan and the excess sediment amendment. The work plan lists out all these tasks that you see as things that staff need to either are doing or need to do in the future. And therefore, it includes as a task developing the measures to control excess sediment amendment and bringing it to you for your consideration. Plus, I should also say the staff work plan relies on the excess sediment prohibition being in place and being implemented in a few instances. For example, there are several watershed-specific tasks that are listed in the work plan that state that staff are going to ensure X or Y landowners in compliance with the prohibition should it be slash after it is adopted. This applies to several of the larger landowners, including timberland owners, before individual ownership-wide WDR would be adopted, and for those for whom who are not going to fall under an individual ownership-wide WDR. Therefore, there is a strong connection between the excess sediment amendment and the staff work plan. While developing this amendment is one task called out in the work plan, many of the other tasks listed in the work plan cannot be done or will be severely hampered without the excess sediment prohibition in place. The next regional task I want to discuss in more detail today is the outreach and education task. Excuse me. This is a really important task for us. We want to really focus a lot of staff effort on it. It's going to include things like determining key stakeholders both at a regional level and within each watershed. And although we don't have a comprehensive list of who all the key stakeholders are, that's going to be one of the tasks is obviously to identify them. But some of them are likely to be the resource conservation districts, stakeholder and watershed groups, trade groups, interest groups like the Farm Bureau, Western United Dairymen, environmental groups, other state and federal agencies, city, counties, landowners, and others. And we also obviously then intend to meet with all interested stakeholders. We want to host regional workshops, watershed-specific workshops that will hopefully educate folks as to what excess sediment is and give an idea of some better ways to control it, as well as what our regulations are. We hope to complete a guidance document that will help in that effort, which is the Guidance for Excess Sediment Control. Develop other helpful information, newsletters, fact sheets, brochures, that kind of thing. As I mentioned, this is going to be an important effort for us, and it's probably going to be something we work on a lot during the development of the Basin Plan Amendment, so it's going to be one of the earlier tasks, and as we develop all the general and specific permits that I had mentioned a few slides ago. I want to point out that you are also seeing a change here from the public review draft, the November draft. Before this task, this outreach and education task was broken into, as they're laid out, as subtasks. One that was encompassed within the excess sediment amendment development task and one within the stream and wetlands policy task. So we combined our outreach and education efforts into one task that deals with general sediment control. It includes outreach for the Basin Plan Amendments, for new permits, and for our sediment control program. The next regional task I want to focus on today as an example is the regional task to develop general WDRs and a general conditional waiver for vineyards. Vineyards are sources of excess sediment, especially access roads and during vineyard development. The first thing to keep in mind with this task, as well as with the other regional tasks to develop general WDRs and waivers, is that this task is a plan to plan. The task calls for staff to develop possible requirements and conditions in the future, and to do so with full public participation, stakeholder involvement, and, of course, your consideration. We don't really know yet exactly what the general WDR for vineyards and the conditional waiver will look like yet, but here is somewhat of a rough sketch. We do intend to propose both a conditional waiver and a general WDR, where the waiver would contain more specific conditions on vineyard management activities, on how to control excess sediment, and we're looking very closely right now at the fish-friendly farming conditions. Waiver does not have a fee. They tend to be easier to enroll in for the landowner as well as easier for staff to administer. And then the general WDR is more individual, more tailored. It allows a landowner to develop, you know, more specific conditions if they don't like, say, in this case, the fish-friendly farming conditions that might be in the waiver. There's a fee associated, obviously, with WDRs, and they are more time-consuming. But there are strengths with both of these approaches, and I want to say that we're looking to the stakeholders to help us develop this general WDR and waiver as well as the other permits that we haven't, that we're have in the future to do. Our timeline for this one, we're currently working with staff of the of Region 2, the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Board, so we can try to have consistency there. We intend to take time to work with stakeholders, solicit public input. We hope to have it before you for your consideration in 2010. All right, we're making some progress here. I now want to talk a little bit about number four, regional task prioritization. And in preparation for when I get to the watershed stuff, Drew, would you mind pulling this up so I can use the overhead projector? Thanks. The rankings for the regional tasks are found in Appendix A of the November public review draft, where they were listed as high, medium, and low. We've recently made some changes to the regional priority ranking system so that the tasks are now ranked in one of the five categories you see there in order to try to really get at the tasks that we're currently working on, those that are underway. That's fine. I can get it from there. Thank you. And then the other rank of very high would be the task that we want to work on next as soon as we have the funding available to do so. And then from there on, high, medium, low, as you can see up there on the slide. And the purpose of these priority rankings is to help guide staff in selecting what tasks to undertake should we not receive all the funding needed to execute all the tasks listed in the work plan in the 10-year period. I'll get to funding in a moment. The regional tasks were prioritized based on staff's best professional judgment, taking into consideration the following factors. We looked at the effect the task could have on reducing excess sediment. So the more effective the task, the higher its rank. We looked at the results of available sediment source analyses from TMDLs when they were available. Tasks that focused on the largest and the most significant sources of sediment, we ranked as higher priorities. For example, any task almost that dealt with roads, we ranked as a high priority. We also looked at ongoing regulatory obligations. For example, we are already obligated to do our stormwater program, so that was ranked as a high task. It's actually a task that's currently underway. And so that leads us into a discussion of the watershed priority rankings, where we ranked each watershed. The purpose here, again, is to have priorities in case funding is not available to fully execute all the tasks in the 10-year time frame of the work plan. And even within that 10-year time frame, we wanted to kind of stagger the work, where we worked in each of the watersheds a little to kind of level off the workload so we didn't have a huge spike of work the first few years. I also want to say this prioritization process, it really is a screening tool for us. And this is the watershed priority ranking as it exists right now. This is a change, again, from the public review draft from the November version. Here, the big change that we made was that we added points to those watersheds where, one, the board has approved an action plan already, so the Garcia and the Scott Rivers, and also where the board has directed staff to specifically develop sediment control actions, so Freshwater Creek, the Russian, Elk River, and the Klamath. And so that brings those six rivers up into the highest priority. I should mention that the point system that we use to prioritize the watershed sometimes resulted in a tie. That's why you see some of these with the same rank, because they just got a tie in the point score. Okay, for the next part of my presentation, I wanted to kind of go over how we got some of these watershed rankings. And these are the forms that we used. And I know you can't read them, but we're going to go through one of these for one of the rivers in more detail in just a minute. We did one of these, though, for each of the 27 watersheds. And let me get this out. The one that I chose for today is the Van Dusen, since it's so close to us here. It seemed very appropriate. Is that somewhat readable? I put a copy in the PowerPoint presentation handout as well, so that may be easier for folks to look at and follow along with. I want to start, though, by saying that this approach for prioritizing watersheds is a modified version of the ranking system developed by the Bradbury Ad Hoc Working Group out of Oregon and their Handbook for Prioritizing Watershed Protection and Restoration to Aid Recovery of Native Salmon. We made some modifications, though, in order to really better represent the characteristics and realities of our North Coast region. I also want to say before I get started, in response to some comments made during the January board meeting, that we're putting together a committee of some staff here at the office with the broad range of expertise and engineer geologists to kind of go through some of these again, where there are some subjective rankings. So what we did for each one of these watersheds is we looked at different factors. One of the big ones that we looked at was the biological and ecological resources within a watershed. The concept here was that if there's a watershed that has more diversity to it, that supports a larger number of species, then that is a higher priority. That's something that we should focus our attention on. So I wanted to start by looking at the species that we have often considered the most sensitive species, the most sensitive beneficial uses to sediment impacts. So coho, chinook, and steelhead. So we looked at what species were present in the watershed and basically added them up. Again, this is, whole thing is a point system, so the higher number of points, the higher priority. And these are some of the data sources that we use. TMDL's CalFish is a fishing game database on fish that are present. There's a subjective call made on the relative abundance of these three species in the watershed. And the reason that I chose medium here for the Van Dusen is kind of relative to, say, a river like the Klamath, which has a higher number of the abundance of these species. I felt that this was more of a medium. Kind of, I was trying to compare streams within our region. Yes, I can. I would say Stemple Creek down in the lower part of the region is a low. They haven't seen steelhead there for quite a while, but there's a historic presence or historic record of them. Other fish and aquatic species that are present, I wanted to not only get at the salmonids, but other organisms that are using the water. So this is a list that we got out of the California Natural Diversity Database, another database run by Fish and Game, and then other sources here, the TMDL and again CalFish. So that was a pretty straightforward process of querying the databases and counting up the numbers. I also looked at ecoregions. This data came out of the U.S. Forest Service, and again, trying just to get a feel for what the diversity within the region is. We looked at the risk of extinction. This was another subjective judgment call that I made. and something that I'm going to be running by that committee of staff to look at some of the more subjective calls of these next week. This really is blurry, isn't it? The beneficial uses is a pretty straightforward count up of the number of existing and potential beneficial uses that are listed in the basin plan for this watershed. We then, I also wanted to consider the risks from sediment problems to humans within these watersheds. And I wanted to look in particular at whether or not fish were eaten for subsistence purposes and if fish were used for ceremonial purposes, for cultural purposes. I put yes here primarily for the subsistence issue. This was a conservative guess on my part that as the Van Dusen and the lower reaches gets around more populated areas, there probably are folks that are pulling fish out there as one of their main food sources. Then I looked at whether or not the current sediment load is negatively impacting drinking water supplies. What I was considering here is if there is a direct drinking water intake, surface drinking water intake, that might be plugged by too much sediment coming down. To the best of my knowledge, that is a no for the Van Dusen. I also, again, want to say that these top three that you see here under risk to humans are probably some of the most subjective things that I called in this watershed prioritization and something that I'll be looking at with the committee of my colleagues next week. Another one of those, as I mentioned, under risk to humans, is a current sediment load causing or threatening to cause floods. My best guess is that it is a somewhat likely occurrence in the Van Dusen. After that, I wanted to look at the potential for improvement if we were able to see reductions in sediment discharges and improvements in the sediment load within the stream. So one of the things I wanted to get a handle on was the volume of natural sediment sources that were being input. Where the TMDL's already been developed, that was a really easy number just to pull out of the TMDL's, 79% here for the Van Dusen. Potential improvements to the salmonid populations, if anthropogenic sediment load is reduced. There I kind of wanted to get at, if we do get a handle on the sediment discharges, will things improve for the fish? So that was if there were other impairments, like a temperature impairment, a nutrient impairment, so that even if you got a hold of the sediment problem, the fish would still be heavily impacted. That was something I considered here. And in the Van Dusen, it's only listed as sediment impaired. However, there's such a high load of natural sediment coming in. I felt that even if we got a good handle on the anthropogenic, the human cause sources, there would still be quite a load of natural sediment coming in that would be still impacting the fish, which is why I gave it a medium checkbox there. We also wanted to look at the presence of the stakeholders, how optimistic we'd be for your support of action within that watershed, and some of the biological, economic, or social obstacles that there might be to fixing sediment sources in the watershed to try to get a little bit of a feel for how realistic it was to do work. And we felt that, yes, there are certainly great stakeholder groups in the Van Dusen, and yes, they're doing a good job of cleaning up sediment, but they don't cover the whole watershed. I was thinking of the Yager group, the YES group. We certainly felt that there's high optimism for board support here, and there were not a lot of big obstacles to fixing the sediment sources, so that's why you see the ranks that you see here for the Van Dusen. And that wraps that part up. Get back to the computer. So with all those rankings, this is what, again, it resulted in. This final ranking here, and you can see the Van Dusen is about halfway down the list. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of idea of the process that we went through there. Now I want to talk a little bit about funding. Per the November public review draft, which was the last time I added up all the numbers for the funding, We estimated at least an additional 19 full-time technical staff are needed in order to work on all the tasks listed in the work plan in that 10-year timeframe. With the changes I've been making to the work plan since November, I expect this number to be higher still. And that 19 staff are on top of the approximately 21 technical staff that are currently working on sediment, at least in some part of their job. If we do not receive additional funding for excess sediment control work, staff will continue to work on the tasks that are currently funded and are currently being worked on, which are these tasks. Most of them are what are listed here. And they're also listed in Table 3 of the Executive Officer's Summary Report, where it's probably a lot easier to read and there's some more detail. Staff are also will also be seeking additional resources through all possible avenues. As more funding becomes available, staff intend to work on the highest priority regional tasks first, likely starting with outreach and education efforts, developing WDRs or conditional waivers for the U.S. Forest Service, and coordinating with the Department of Fish and Game and NOAA Fisheries on habitat conservation plans and incidental take permits. We intend to focus on the regional regional tasks first, because those tasks will impact almost all, if not all, of the sediment-impaired watersheds and should give us, hopefully, the most bang for our buck. Once most of the regional tasks are underway, staff then intend to focus on the more watershed-specific tasks, starting with those highest priority watersheds. And that brings me to a summary of the comments that we have received thus far. Since the November public review draft was released, we've been engaged in outreach activities, have received written and oral comments from public and interested parties. As of January 18th, which was the day after our last board meeting, we have received 27 comment letters. A summary of these comments are found in Table 1 of the Executive Officer's Summary Report. We've received several comments since January 18th, but I just didn't have time to summarize them and get them in here. Real briefly, here's what the summary of those written comments are. We had 10 of the about 30 letters were explicitly supported the work plan. None of the letters specifically explicitly opposed the work plan as a whole. And all the letters had suggestions of one form or another, ways to make it better. And I want to say that a lot of the comments we got were really great and really are making the work plan a better document. The current comment period will close a week from Monday on the 17th. And by April 1st, I should have a response to comments, the document available for all the comments that we do receive by that March 17th date. In response to the comments that we've received, both written and oral, we've also been making changes to the work plan. The significant changes that have been made as of February 13th are listed again in the Executive Officer Summary Report in Table 2. Here are a few examples of some of the larger changes we've made. For one, many interested parties commented that they wish to be considered a key stakeholder and went to work with the Regional Water Board on excess sediment control in their watershed. Staff are revising the work plan to state that staff will work with all interested parties. Additionally, language in the regional outreach and education task is being changed, and a new task is being added to each watershed for staff to first identify key stakeholders and work with all interested stakeholders to control excess sediment. We have also added and revised language pertaining to in-stream gravel mining activities in the lower mainstem Eel, Gualala, Mad, and Russian Rivers to clarify the goals of our 401 certification and program and stormwater permits, and to link mitigation specifically to 401 cert requirements, if there are any. We also revised language pertaining to in-stream gravel mining in all these watersheds so that they are consistent. We also received language pertaining to the estuary and levees near Oric in the Redwood Creek watershed, and we're revising language to state that staff intend to work with stakeholders on channel and riparian improvement projects to reduce excess sediment and offer flood control protection. I must admit that there are more changes that need to be made in response to the comments that we've already received, So for those out there who have submitted comment letters but don't see changes reflected in the work plan yet in Table 2, just ask for some more patience. I'll get to them. Again, I intend to have the next version of the staff work plan available April 1st, which should incorporate all of these comments and the changes. And all the comments that we received by March 17th as well. And that leads me right into this list of dates. I just described the March 17th and April 1st date. Next time I'll be before you is in June in Santa Rosa, so that is when we will be asking your consideration of the resolution. I now want to say that staff would like to have the next revision of the staff work plan, the one that comes out April 1st, be the final work plan. Considering the comments that have been made orally at our last two board meetings, our comment letters that we've received, and the high quality of those comments, at this point, I don't expect another round of public comments to add anything more to the work plan. I think the changes that we are making now will result in a really good version on April 1st that should be a sufficient final document. So I'm asking that we actually take out that round two of public comment period if it's supported by this board. And that concludes my presentation. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
All right. Board. Again, we've had a workshop in the South End earlier and worked well to try to duplicate that today on this end. Again, the decisions and direction is to come at a subsequent time, but we are anxious to hear from the public, make additional comments, and I suspect take a few comments from the board. We will see. Mr. Corbett.
Yeah, I know I've made this comment in the past, but I assume basically the advisory staff work plan does not amend the triennial review adopted by this board, even if there's conflicts with your prioritization. Is that correct?
That is correct. This work plan does not supersede the triennial review priority list that you adopted last year.
I had one other clarification. It's not meant by the staff merely presenting a ranking rationale for how they set priorities that you're in any way being pre-decisional on beneficial uses. I want that understanding because I think there's some confusion out there. Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else? All right. Again, we'll open up for public comment, start with Susan Quorum, and then go to Daniel Myers. And I'm aware that people may have submitted written comments or testified to us before, but if you made this long trek, I'll try to accommodate and try to limit yourselves to 3 minutes.
Okay.
We have additional items before us yet today, so, and there are about 10 or so speakers.
I'm Susan Quorum. I represent the Creek Tribe, but today I'm representing the Klamath Basin Tribal Water Quality Work Group, which is a collaboration of five tribes on the Middle Klamath and also the Trinity and the Scott River. We would just like to say how important sediment is. I feel I really like the presentation, and we're very pleased that the Klamath and the Trinity is ranking high on your prioritization list. Sediment is a huge issue for the tribes. It affects the fisheries, it affects tribal trust, it affects environmental justice, it affects all these things. I think you guys know this. We've talked about all this before. One thing that we would like to see at some point, which I just want to mention again, is that the middle part of the Klamath is not listed for sediment. From about Beaver Creek down, it should be listed. It is a huge issue there. And also, when you're coordinating and working with other agencies, particularly the Forest Service, private timber, we'd like to make sure that you're being realistic with the roads. The roads are one of the biggest issues for sediment that we see. There's timber plans now that are being asked to put in more roads. We definitely need to consider whether that's worth it or not. There's roads that are not being maintained at this point. There's roads that should be decommissioned. So I would ask that all of these things being taken into account when you guys are thinking about sediment. If you can't afford to decommission the roads, then you should at least go in and just pull out the culverts and make these agencies maintain the roads that they already have so we don't have big debris torrents and we're not clogging up the fish gravel with sediment. We also wholly support the funding that you need for the additional staff. We think that is a high priority. So on behalf of Yurok, Karuk, Quartz Valley, Hoopa, and Rezegini, we wholly support the sediment amendment and hope that you guys can get the staff on to make the improvements that need to be made in the Klamath watershed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Daniel Myers, followed by Mark Lancaster.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Daniel Myers with the Sierra Club. We do support this program. And I understand from staff that there were very few comments that have been submitted on the resolution itself, and I would encourage others to take a good look at it. I think it's weak compared to the 2004 resolution, which was very explicit. And in this case, where we're trying to ask for 19 new staff members in a very difficult environment, I think you have to make the case in the resolution. In other words, this is the board members putting it on record that this is what we want and it's why we need it. And the case is there, but it isn't spelled out in the language that's there now. We have offered comments in writing. They're not adequate, and we will provide additional comment, but I would encourage others to do the same. The 2004 resolution listed 15 rivers. 4 years later, it's 27 rivers. We're almost double. And so we need to get going on this. We need it. We need 19 people. And I think language that's, I would not like to see any language set out that sets up an alternate plan for not having 19 people. In other words, I don't think there should be a plan B on this, because our schedule that we have for completing all the TMDLs is 2017 or 2019. And this means they're all supposed to be completed by that, even the temperature TMDLs. This plan would allow us to perhaps start doing the implementation. In other words, this schedule is just for the start of doing work to get a plan. So it's too critical, you know, not to get inadequate staff. If we don't have the staff, and we don't have also the stream and wetland policy, if we don't have that to go along with this, what we have is just a wasted effort that's taken place, and we're just back to where we started 4 years ago. So I encourage, again, a very strong resolution. Spell out why you should get 19 people, and we will help with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Lancaster, followed by Dina Moore.
Good afternoon. Mark Lancaster, Five Counties Salmonid Conservation Program. And I won't go over the comments that I made at our last meeting, except to say that I found the staff to be really wonderful in taking those comments, and ours were just verbal at that time and synthesizing them. Second, I do really appreciate you guys putting this work program out for public review. Having said that, this work program is in part implementing the TMDL implementation plan, so it is unusual, and I think it's appropriate that you do that. We'll have a number of comments. Some are substantive, some are minor editorial, and some probably reflect a little bit of the distrust that occurs between staff and the affected other entities, and some of it may not actually exist. It's just some of the language in the document. I specifically want to talk about a couple of things, though. I don't think that this work plan can be complete until it synthesizes the coho recovery strategy from fish and game. And the reason for that is that there are specific funding that occur under that recovery strategy. Weight is given to implementing that strategy from fish and game. And a number of the specific watershed recommendations that are in that came through a year of work with a very multidisciplinary team that did not include just fish and game staff, but include representatives from all interest groups, academia, industry, environmental, sport fishing. And the beneficial use targets for much of the sediment, you've heard it here, you've even heard in the prioritization criteria, fisheries consumption as a criteria. So I think that the beneficial use of cold water fisheries and the coho recovery strategy are so well linked that there needs to be a synthesis of that. Also, that coho recovery strategy had a watershed prioritization based on many of the factors you have here presented. But again, it was done through a much broader and much more multidisciplinary approach. And I did find Rebecca, two great things about Rebecca's work. It's done by one person, so it's consistent, which is great. And it is as transparent as can be. She has shown you it and told you some of the limitations. And for instance, the weighting the value of consumption of fish to be equal to the ability to achieve sediment reduction in points. I think you need a harder look at that, which brings me to the point. I agree with Rebecca that you probably don't really need to hear more in terms of substantive changes to this document, with the exception of that watershed prioritization. And I really do think that that's a flawed element in this, but it's, and I think it should come back and better review and analysis of that criteria should be done. I also, if I could ask, there's so many tasks in here that are so internal to the water board staff, and I realize it's a direction of the staff, but I think it would really be important for once to have the water board staff actually have a task to bring in far more people into the process of some of these tasks, like weighting the value of grading ordinances, for instance, and others. They don't need to be standalone, and there's a lot of us who have worked in this and a lot of other agencies, and I would really like to see the task say, let's break this trend. Let's have the staffs get together and work, and others, on some of these sediment projects. And I'll give you a specific
Mark, if you begin to conclude.
I think I'm going to leave it with those comments, and I will actually get to, we've been so busy implementing the stuff in here since the last meeting, I haven't had time to write the formal comments to you.
We'll grade you next time. Yeah.
That's fair.
How far you got.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask one question? You mentioned the prioritization of the watersheds, and I was trying to address that in two ways of saying that we weren't trying to be pre-decisional on the beneficial uses and the triennial review. Now, I realize this is probably totally unfair, but if you're acquainted with the triennial review, by a miracle of miracles, did you find those priorities better?
I am acquainted with it, and I knew you when you said that as an attorney, I knew exactly where you were going with your earlier comments. I'll answer that the next meeting.
Okay.
All right. And
thank you.
Just for the record, we tried to give you a new job in our minutes, but we've taken care of that problem.
Yeah. Oh, okay. A lot of people have been trying to give me a new job.
Dina Mora, followed by Joanna Rodona.
Good afternoon, Board. Nice to see you in Humboldt County. I've got a note here that I will read to you today, and then I will submit it to Jean for the record. The members of YES, my watershed group, the Yaga Van Dusen Environmental Stewards, appreciate the integrity, effort, outreach, and transparency of this process that the board and staff are using while developing the work plan to control sediment. It's just a significant change, and it's wonderful to see, and I really, on a personal level, appreciate it, and we do from a watershed perspective as well. As I'm sure you guys are aware, as many others, we are keenly interested in this document, the implementation of the outlined tasks, as well as the long-term realistic benefits that it may play in reducing anthropogenic sediment on the North Coast. We really welcome the additional time and the geographic location of this meeting to continue the robust public comment period for this important item. So following our remarks for your consideration. The first question that I would raise is realistic. Is the work plan realistic given the current level of staff and resources? And, you know, and as I was drafting this note today, I could have gone on and on and on with that, but just having said that, is it really realistic? 19 additional staff in this current budget cycle, looking at limited money resources, and I could spiel for you what it's like getting grants in this day and age and how competitive that is. So that's just a question. How much will this cost this agency and landowners who are all currently challenged both monetarily and from a workload perspective? And finally, how many programs, policies, permits, documents, and meetings will landowners have to attend to stay current with and engaged in to stay abreast of developments within the authorized regulatory framework for sediment control with just this agency? With regards to clarity, there seems to be a degree of confusion from our perspective as to whether or not the work plan will fulfill the requirements of the sediment TMDL action or implementation plan, as it used to be called. The question arises, in addition to the work plan for sediment, the prohibition for excess sediment, waivers for specific activities, WDRs for specific activities, will landowners also have to look forward to an action implementation plan for each of the sediment-impaired watersheds that do not, as of yet, have an action plan? In addition to the work plan, staff refers to a road management policy, the triennial review step number 16. Is this yet another policy that landowners need to be concerned with, provide input to, follow, and participate in? Isn't this issue addressed by the work plan? And if it's not addressed by the work plan, why not? The majority of anthropogenic sediment is caused by roads, and more specifically within the Van Dusen, as Rebecca shared with you earlier, 80% of our sediment is natural background, but of the remaining 20%, I want to say 12 to 15% is caused by roads. So again, I'm looking at a work plan without, so enough being, having said there. Monitoring is an activity that's been identified as a priority by EPA, State Water Resources Control Board, and your staff as a priority. Yet this work plan does not address monitoring. In the work plan, staff states that, quote, a sediment TMDL implementation monitoring strategy will be developed separately by regional water board staff as directed by the regional water board in the sediment TMDL implementation policy. So why isn't this incorporated into the work plan? In closing, landowners are overwhelmed and confused. We need some degree of succinct mechanism for addressing the same single pollutant of sediment on our landscapes that are managed by single families with decreasing resources and increasing regulations. And I think just to also add in closing, I appreciated Rebecca's hard work on this. She's worked very diligently and very hard on it, and I really appreciate all the energy and effort she's put into it. As you can imagine, when I was looking for the prioritization, how the Van Dusen ranked, I was very interested in that. For those of you who don't know, my husband's family is the fifth generation ranchers in the Van Dusen. My children will be the sixth generation. Since 1999, I've been deeply involved in watershed issues. I worked with EPA on development of the technical TMDL and actually did a historical narrative and outreach program for the Van Dusen. Fish eaten to sustain human population? Yes? I really have to question that. I can tell you in the Depression, my mother-in-law ate a lot of venison, but I don't know how much fish. So I guess what I would say is it does concern me if our prioritization is based on beliefs or has a subjective basis to it. I really like Mark's idea or thoughts. We've got the Coho Recovery Plan. They have a mechanism in place. If we're going to do these priorities and rankings, I really don't think that we're in an arena where it needs to be subjective. Thank you, Board, and really nice to see you here in Humboldt County.
All right. Thank you, Dina. Joanna, followed by Jim Regley.
Thanks for coming to Fortuna and welcome. I'm here as a representative of the Buckeye Conservancy. We've been to several meetings with both staff and some of your board members regarding the work plan and the basin plan amendment for excess sediment. The Buckeye Conservancy thinks the work plan should be totally decoupled from the basin plan amendment for excess sediment in discussion. In trying to understand this process, it has been very confusing to us to have staff talking about both the work plan and the basin plan amendment for excess sediment as a pairing. In fact, we feel that the work plan should not be a document at all that comes before the board for approval, but should be treated as an internal document just to guide staff. I'm assuming that's why it's called a work plan. We appreciate staff's efforts in their outreach and look forward to continuing that process. Now, the basin plan amendment for excess sediment is an entirely different story in itself, primarily because it's a regulatory document. Buckeye supports and encourages the development of a thorough staff report to agendize this item prior to agendizing this item for consideration. The staff report should review all options for achieving the goals of the proposed amendment, including recognition of existing regulatory programs, voluntary programs, and waivers. There should also be very concise definitions of what terms such as inventory, implement, and monitor mean, so the landowners have a clear understanding of the requirements, timing, and costs. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Jim Regley, followed by Denver Nelson.
Thank you. I'm Jim Regley, representing Humboldt County Farm Bureau. And Humboldt County Farm Bureau is made up of approximately 700 members, which are ranchers, dairymen, and farmers. And our main concern with this is a lot of our operators feel they're not contributing to sediment in these streams. Many of the operators, the dairies, the ranchers, the timber producers, are already covered by nutrient management plans, restoration plans, or timber harvest plans. And all this is in a letter that we have prepared for you, so I'll just hand that out now to you and appreciate your time you're taking with us. Thanks.
Thank you. Denver Nelson, followed by Jennifer Colt.
Hi, my name's Denver Nelson. I live in Eureka. I used to own a ranch in Dina's watershed. I was a member of the YES group from the start. I traded that ranch for a dairy right out here across the river. May have been a mistake, but that's the way it is. I've been interested in sediment for a long time. I'm actually pleased to see that the Klamath River is listed as sediment impaired, because until last year it wasn't, and I spent about 2 or 3 years trying to get the Klamath listed as sediment impaired. I think it's important to sort of sit back and figure out what it is about sediment and the North Coast. The sediment-impaired rivers are basically all the rivers that drain into the ocean from San Francisco up to the Klamath. And the reason they produce so much sediment is because of the soil type that exists. And so when it rains, it all runs into the ocean, as opposed to a lot of other areas where the soil type is not as easily disrupted. So I'm also pleased that Rebecca used the Van Dusen as sort of an example of sediment, because there was a guy named Kelsey who wrote a PhD thesis about sediment production, and he started studying the Van Dusen River in the 50s, and that was the basis of his thesis. And what he came up with as a way of measuring sediment is really what is the basis for all sediment measurements that have been done. I'd just like to tell you a little bit about how it worked on the Van Dusen. What he did was, and what the EPA did later on to get the TMDL, was to take random plots generated statistically, I think, with a computer, and measure how much sediment there was in those areas, you know, this deep by this wide, There might have not been any in their 40-acre plots. I think there were 4-acre plots. And then he extrapolated that to the whole area and then went out on the ground and actually looked at all those plots and said, you know, this 40 acres is next to a road, and therefore the road must be causing this sediment, or it isn't next to anything, so it's natural sediment. And what the conclusion of the TMDL was that about over 80% of the sediment production was due to natural causes, and the other 20% or so was due to the other things. And Yager Van Dusen group, we then went on to get some grant funding, and we did a road assessment because that was the source of most of the sediment in that area. Interestingly enough, some people thought that grazing cattle and sheep, what have you, were causing sediment, but that never was a part of the TMDL. If you read it, there wasn't any, that was not a cause of any sediment. It was roads. So we went out and hired PWA, to assess the roads. They assessed all the roads in our watershed. We then went on to prioritize the roads, and we have spent, I don't know, $6 million or something like that in grant money fixing those roads. Of course, now we're out of grant money, and we can't get any more funding. That, to me, is how TMDLs and sediment assessment should be done, because now you can go back and repeat the TMDL process and you can find out if taking out all those roads did any good. Unfortunately, a lot of the other TMDLs that have been done on these rivers are sort of extrapolations of that to that watershed, but you can't figure out if doing anything in those watersheds made any difference. So you can't repeat, you can't do that. Now, as I said, I bought a dairy.
Before you go to that one, I'm ask you to conclude.
Okay. Well, dairies don't produce sediment. Okay. All right. They receive sediment from up above. And that is well shown in the draft TMDL that the EPA did for the Lower Eel. There's another Salt River that is part of that that showed that 100% of the sediment produced in the Salt River, which is right over there, was due to natural causes and not due to any man-made things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jennifer Cault, followed by Regina.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Cult. I'm with Humboldt Baykeeper, and I just want to make a plea for not making the April 1st work plan the final work plan, because, you know, it's been advertised that there's going to be another comment period here, and I was a little alarmed to hear that. So that's all I wanted to say at this point.
Okay.
Because I'm still developing my comments. Thank you.
Regina Cicciozzolo, followed by Rick Costalos.
Hi. Hi, Board. Thank you for hearing me again on this issue, and I'll try to be really fast because I have talked to you about it before. And I, again, thank you for taking on sediment in the North Coast. It's obvious one of the biggest pollutants we have to deal with here, and it's obviously very much from man-made influences. I mean, there is natural sediment, of course, but the reason why we have these problems is because of man-made influences. One thing I would like to say about this is I would really like to see enforcement be a big issue within this process. Right now, especially on the Klamath, we have a lot of really good plans in place in which if all of the plans were actually enforced and if all of the different processes were actually enforced, the river would probably not be so sediment impaired or nutrient impaired. And we have very, very little enforcement at all on the Klamath, and so I would like to see an enforcement mechanism and many of the staff people working on this going into enforcement. I also would like to make sure that this board knows that there is a big habitat conservation plan that's being planned for much of the private timberlands in Siskiyou County right now for the timber products lands. or I mean, sorry, for the fruit grower supply lands, and that is going to be within also the Scott River, which is sediment impaired, and it's going to include allowing new road building in areas like Beaver Creek and the Scott River, where road building has completely decimated the watersheds with sediment. So in this process, maybe you could think about how you're going to deal with those kind of plans in the future. I would also like, I don't know if the board is aware, but there's been a lot of media lately about how the price of gold has gone up, and the fact that there's going to be suction dredge miners moving in everywhere they can. And so I would like suction dredge mining to be looked at in this plan, especially in places like the Scott River, where suction dredge mining has really added to the sediment in the river. And then I just would like to see consistency with how this plan is implemented and how the enforcement of this plan is worked on, because it seems like we have, because Santa Rosa is so far away from the very northern part of the state, we don't see a lot of consistency within TMDL implementation and within the way that these things are planned and enforced. That's about it, and I also just wanted to make sure, I know the Scott River TMDL was really relying on the Scott River ITPs, and because of this habitat conservation plan, we're going to have a lot more sediment issues in the Scott River, and that's going to include more ITPs in the Scott River. So just maybe watch all the other processes that are going on with other agencies really close and make sure those other agencies are aware of this planning process so they can deal with sediment. And thank you for focusing on the Klamath, and I think the Klamath is probably going to be listed for sediment further up than just the Yurok Reservation part of it soon, so maybe also keep that in mind, because a lot of people are saying the Klamath is impaired for sediment further up, and even though we keep writing comments saying that that should be listed, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure it will at some point. Thanks.
Thank you. Rick. This will be our last speaker, unless somebody's got another card out there hiding.
No, my name is Rick Costales. I'm the new Natural Resource Policy Specialist for Siskiyou County. I'm sure you all know Jim Dupree. I've taken Jim's job. I'm new at the job. I started in December. I've been mostly involved in the implementation of the TMDLs on the Scott and the Shasta with the groundwater study plan, Lake Shastina, the county road stuff. So this work plan is something, I'm sorry, new in the job. It was under my radar. I was told that they would like me to look this work plan over and make some comments. And so I've only had 3 days to review it, and I'm also not a technical expert on this. As you can imagine, there's plenty of resources in Siskiyou County, so I'm spread pretty thin on natural resource issues. But one obvious thing did occur to me, and it's been presented, and we'll have some other comments as well. But with regard to the prioritization, if you look at the abundance of Chinook, Coho, and Steelhead salmon, if it's a high abundance, it gets a 3. If it's a low abundance, it gets a 1. With regard to extinction, high risk of extinction gets a 3 and a low 1. So, in other words, it seems to me that something with a high abundance and low risk of extinction gets 4 points. Something with a low abundance and a high risk of extinction also gets 4 points. It looks like we've got two things on the complete opposite ends of the scale, yet in terms of what we want to deal with and manage for, yet they receive the same number of points. And again, I'm not an expert, technical expert. There may be scientific reasons and functional internal reasons that why Rebecca would something with these two reins, intuitively it seems they're on opposite ends of the scale, yet they score the same. So I'd like to see some explanation of that. It would seem that there might be other problems with regard to the prioritization too, that when I understand these things have to be arbitrary to a certain degree, it's always tough when you're starting awarding points for things, but something that with intuitively that big a discrepancy seems like there ought to be some difference there in terms of the scoring. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Again, that's the last speaker card that I have. At this juncture, we would say again that staff have received comments. The will come back to the board in the future, and we will be asked to sort through it, make sense out of it, I guess, and move on to the next item unless I hear loud objections otherwise.
Well, now, can I just say a couple? One of them is I find our concept that a basin plan amendment is to be implemented by another basin plan amendment just a really unusual concept, and that relates back to my earlier comments. I don't want to be amending the triennial review. And I did want to say for the public that there were provisions added to take into account HCPs, incidental take permits, as well as 1601 stream bed alteration programmatic permits to try and have a way of responding.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. If I may, just a little bit of guidance. Rebecca had mentioned perhaps not having another review period after the April 1 revised report comes out. What's the feeling of the board on that? Would you prefer that we release that and then accept additional comments, make amendments, and come to you with those in June? Kind of leave it as it stands?
I think we're, you know, appreciate, but we have been open to comment and taking comment, and at some point, again, this is quite unusual to have a staff work plan out, and you know, at the end of the day, it goes back to the staff to work on it. It's not a policy or amendment. It's a staff guidance document. So it's my sense is bring it back, and we will review it. We don't need have a review of the review before we review it.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. The board is going to take a break.